The issues that matter most, right here. The Drew Mariani Show
on Relevant Radio.
Good afternoon, John Harper for Drew. Let's talk a little bit about conscience. Now, you and I examine it on a daily basis, and as Catholics, you know that relativism always tries to get us to mold our conscience to that of the culture, right? Well, coming up in just a few minutes, we're going to give you ways to turn the tables on the culture so you can stand up as a Roman Catholic man or woman and kind of push back from a position of strength, which is where we should be. And this could be good news for you and me as Catholics. Elon Musk, the founder of Tesla, in the last half hour is said to have reached a deal to buy Twitter. Now, why is that good news for you and me as Catholics? Well, Patrick Madrid will be here later in this hour to talk about how getting that majority control, how Elon Musk, who's a big proponent in free speech, could be a good thing for you and me as Catholics. And another reason to use, as we've talked so many times before here on Relevant Radio, to use our social media platforms as a way to evangelize. And boy, is there a lot to talk about in terms of standing up for our faith, because something is happening right now as you and I speak on this Monday afternoon before the Supreme Court. There's a big case of religious freedom being argued, and he lost his job because he prayed on the field. Right now, the Supreme Court is hearing the case of Coach Joseph Kennedy. He's the football coach at Bremerton High School. That's right outside of Seattle. For 7 years, he would pray by himself on the field. He would thank God for his glory. And then a few players joined on their own. No coercion in any way, shape, or form. Then in 2015, a coach from an opposing team objected to the fact that Coach Kennedy was out there praying. And then soon parents joined in the protest, and now we've gone from the gridiron to the Supreme Court.
In the First Amendment, we have the freedom to exercise our religion in the public square, at our homes, in our communities. But there's also part of the First Amendment called the Establishment Clause. The government shall not establish a religion. And so here we are at a public school with a teacher who wants to outwardly practice his faith on duty, on the job, he says, by himself. At the same time, the school district says, well, wait a second, we can't be establishing, promoting religion.
That's ABC's Devin Dwyer, who's following the story. Now, the school district says, as an employee of a public school system, Coach Kennedy is an agent of the state. See their argument here? And as a result of being a, quote, agent of the state, he has violated the religious freedom of students who felt the pressure to pray to play, even though none of that factored into this argument. Speaking of arguments, right now, Coach Kennedy's attorney, Paul Clement, is before the Supreme Court. He is the former Solicitor General of the United States, part of his argument.
When the school district fired him for that fleeting religious exercise out of endorsement concerns, it not only violated the First Amendment, but it ignored a veritable wall of this court's precedents that make clear that a school does not endorse private religious speech just because it fails to censor it.
And let's take you inside some of the exchange that Coach Kennedy's lawyer is having with some of the justices. Here's an exchange between Associate Justice Sonia Sotomayor and Attorney Clement. They're talking about a hypothetical. This is a hypothetical. If you walk in and see a teacher praying at his or her desk,
it's during instructional time. It's during a time where she has instructional.
How about duties. Before the bell rings? So, students are coming in. She's reading the Bible. She's reading it out loud before the bell. Is it the bell that makes it within the time or not within the time?
Okay, so that's the exchange between Sonia Sotomayor and Attorney Clement. Here's the exchange between Associate Justice Clarence Thomas and Attorney Clement at the Supreme Court.
We know it's not a part of his job, especially since the school district didn't know anything about it initially. And it objected to it, so it can't be a part of his job.
Well, that's music to my ears, Justice Thomas.
We'll go inside this topic a little bit later on, because if the coach is not victorious, although with conservative judges on the Supreme Court, they may rule in his favor. Lower courts have ruled in favor of the schools. So without sounding too alarmist, but it really is a slippery slope. If they object to the coach by himself just taking a knee and praying on the field, how long is it before somebody comes up to you and me in a restaurant saying grace before a meal? We'll talk about that a little bit later on. And the other big story today is Twitter. Those Twitter shares are rising. Elon Musk has had not quite announced, but the word is leaking out. There's a deal to buy Twitter, and Twitter's board and Musk, of course, you know Musk, the car maker, Tesla's CEO. They're hammering out the final details. Last time I checked the stock, it was at $52 and change. Musk is offering $54.20. So what would Musk do with Twitter? Mark Mahaney is the senior managing director and head of internet research at Evercore ISI.
He has talked about things like reducing content moderation at Twitter. He has talked about allowing people to edit their tweets. He has talked about perhaps removing the 280 character limit that's in tweets and trying to get rid of some of the spam that's in Twitter.
So this could be good news for you and me as Catholics. Again, to you, social media as a platform to evangelize. We'll talk about this a little bit later on when Relevant Radio's Patrick Madrid joins us here on the Drew Mariani Show. And also going on in Austin, Texas.
Free Melissa Lucio!
Jesus,
Jesus. Free Melissa Lucio!
Jesus,
Jesus. Free Melissa Lucio!
Those are supporters at a rally in Austin yesterday for 52-year-old Melissa Lucio, who was scheduled to be executed on Wednesday for the death of her 2-year-old daughter. Lucio would be the first Latina executed in the United States. Now, nearly half the jurors who sentenced the mother of 14 children to die for the 2007 death of her child have now called for her execution to be halted. They want a new trial to be called. Her lawyers claim that there's new evidence that shows that the injuries to the little girl were caused by a fall down a staircase and not the claims of abuse. Here's Texas State Representative Alex Dominguez, who supports a new look at this death penalty case.
The worst thing that can happen is we execute an innocent person.
Allow a little bit of reprieve. Let's take a look. What's the harm? What's the rush? Sparing a mother who has suffered, who has lost, who's been away from her family for years.
So those are just a couple of things that we wanted to get you up to date on here at 10 minutes after the hour on the Drew Mariani Show. John Harper filling in today. And of course, all of these stories have a common thread, and it's the common thread of conscience. And of course, you and I make that examine every single night in prayer and also before we head into the confessional. But conscience, when you stop to think about it, is more than just that examine. It's the moral compass that you and I have, calibrated by prayer and by sacrifice and by the intercession of the Holy Spirit. And you and I have talked about living out our faith and having our conscience guide us through the culture of relativism, where conscience is just as disposable as anything else. That's relativism. You and I have experienced all of that. Let's take a deeper look at that right now. Father Robert McTagg is a member of the Maryland province of the Society of Jesus. He's a professor of philosophy and theology. He has taught and lectured around the world, known for his classes in both rhetoric and medical ethics, and he's a regular contributor to important Catholic publications around the world, helping us to calibrate our conscience this afternoon. Father McTagg, welcome back to Relevant Radio.
John, it's very good to be working with you again. Thanks be to God.
As a priest, as a Jesuit like us, trying to stay inside the lines on the path to heaven, how do you define conscience in the culture of 2022?
Well, I define it as the way the church has always taught it, and not at all as what the culture of 22 would have us believe. 2022, conscience is shut up, he explained. I get to do whatever the heck I want, and when you question me about it, I say conscience, and you're supposed to fall silent. And if I feel something very intensely, then that's conscience. And the short answer to that is no. Conscience is a function of reason. Conscience is the ability to recognize the moral law, which is available to every human being everywhere on the planet in every age, and then to see what my obligations are in this particular set of circumstances towards the moral law. So there's the objective dimension, which is the moral law, the obligations of being human, and then there's the subjective dimensions. This is what I must say yes to. This is what I must say no to in my particular circumstances. And what's overlooked, yes, it's true the church says you must follow your conscience. The small print that no one looks at is you must have a well-formed conscience. And a well-formed conscience recognizes the natural law available to anyone of ordinary intelligence and also recognizes sacred revelation for those who have received the gift of faith.
Before we get to that well-formed conscience, Father McTagg, you talked about conscience being a function of reason. Of course, the yes. Twitter story and Elon Musk is making headlines this afternoon, and we'll go in depth with that when Patrick Madrid joins us later in the hour. Has social media attenuated our ability to reason in 2022 because the social media is thinking for us? And I know I'm using a broad brush with that.
Well, yes, social media has not been good for conscience for a number of reasons. It's a mob mentality. And rather than searching for the moral truth, which is available to everyone, we want to see which way is the wind blowing. How shall we virtue signal today? How will I indicate to the mob that I am in defense of or in favor of the current thing? And what's really alarming me in social media now is we've gone from virtue signaling, look at me, praise me because I like the right things, to hate signaling, look at me, like me because I hate the right people. And that concerns me very greatly. And sometimes moral reflection and examination need more than 280 characters.
So 10 days ago, we were on Mount Calvary, so nothing has changed. It's the mob mentality.
No. Fallen human beings getting together in a large group with enthusiasm and excitement, and one person shouting above the crowd, that inevitably ends very badly. I mean, we saw that in Socrates, and we saw this, most especially with our Lord, which is why we need sober voices, and we need the guidance of the church, the great doctors of the church, who were not only reasonable people, but also people of grace and prayer and humility, who knew that a human nature left to its own devices can only end badly. That's why we need to be sober, and we need to have conversations that lead to clarity and charity rather than inflammation and violence.
Father McTagg, you know, in our conversations here on Relevant Radio, we always look for solutions. And, we use the God-given gifts that we have to come up with solutions. So as you talk about virtue signaling and now hate signaling, with the pendulum swinging over to hate signaling, how do we use all of the tools that we have available to us, from social media to just interactions with someone else, to turn all of this negativity into something that really does share what our conscience is and who we are as Roman Catholic men and women?
Well, we have to start by loving the truth. And the truth isn't a concept, an idea, or an ideology. It is the person of Christ. The truth is the eternal Word of the Father, the second person of the Trinity, the only begotten Son of God. And when we begin to love Him, because He is truth, He is beauty, He is goodness, and He is Savior, then we begin to see that all of creation, the orders of nature and grace, can be gathered and coordinated by graced intelligence to serve the true, the good, and the beautiful. So if we want to get our social and social media house in order, like everything else, we're in chaos if we're not under the kingship of Christ. So let's proclaim Christ as King, who's crucified, risen, reigning, and returning, and order everything in subordination to His mission, wisdom, and goodness. Absent that, we're just spinning our wheels.
We're talking about a well-formed conscience with Father Robert McTagg here on the Drew Mariani Show, and we invite you to be a part of the conversation at 888-914-9149, 888-914-9149. Curious, as moms and dads as grandparents, what is the role that you play as parents and grandparents in really forming and giving your children, your grandchildren, that moral compass, and making sure that that moral compass is on the right bearing all the time? Forming a conscience, 888-914-9149. As you talk about loving the truth, I can't help but think about the famous line from A Few Good Men, where Jack Nicholson on the stand says, "You can't handle the truth." Has that become more than a punchline and more of a way that we look at the truth here today, even as Catholics, when we know better? It's like, well, you can't handle the truth. Well, okay, then I'll just go with the tide of relativism.
Well, you know, in the context of the movie, it was an admonition. He says, I want to tell you the truth, but be prepared for it. You can't handle it. And when we say you can't handle the truth, that doesn't mean, so therefore you're exempting from knowing it and conforming to it. What we're saying when we declare you can't handle the truth is you're such a failure as a human being that you don't have, that you have surrendered the tools of mind and heart to conform to the truth. Shame on you. Now, that admonition may be true. By itself, it's not helpful. The so-called pastoral approach is to tell the fullness of truth from the orders of grace and nature, and then give people the natural and supernatural means to begin to conform to and live that truth. You can't handle the truth, followed by, let me help you with that.
Have we outsourced conscience a bit? Because as you and I have this conversation, it comes right back to the domestic church, right at home, mom and dad. Yes. Have we outsourced conscience to look at professional athletes, others outside of our own realm, to form conscience, to say, yeah, do that? Obviously, the good ones, yeah, we want to do that because there are examples of a lot of good that we want to share with our kids and our grandkids. But that really starts at the kitchen table.
Well, yes, it does. I mean, especially in the earlier part of life, a child's moral imagination, for better or worse, is being formed. And there's no substitute for good examples. And that means the people who are under the roof with you, also the heroes that you read about in great literature, in the history of the church, and so on. Absent that, a child's imagination and conscience doesn't remain empty. It gets filled with something else, and that something else is coming primarily now through unfiltered electronic screens, God help us. And as we're learning to our horror in recent years, certainly since the time of the COVID interruption, that a lot of these professional educators that we entrust our children to 8 hours a day, 5 days a week, are moral reprobates. They're monsters. They're looking forward to corrupting our children and then become indignant when you quote them accurately. So I think lots of folks have surrendered their moral authority. It's a 24/7 job to raise children well, and we need to admit that and say, happily, the Catholic Church is here to help.
Right. And how do you keep that moral authority in your family? We're talking about this with Father Robert McTagg, and you at 888-914-9149, 888-914-9149. You used a term, moral imagination. You're talking about children. That almost right. Sounds on face value that it's an oxymoron. What is moral imagination?
Aristotle said the virtuous man shows us what's possible in human life. Theodore Dalrymple was a psychiatrist who worked in the British prison system, and he dealt with young people who had never read a great book and knew nothing about history. And so when someone steps on his foot in the pub, well, of course I had to stab him to death because no one in human history ever suffered the indignation that I have. But if you had read the book of Job or read some great history and literature, you would know that that's complete nonsense. So moral imagination shows us what is possible in terms of human behavior, both the good and the bad. Reading about the saints and heroes shows us what's possible when people choose the true, the good, and the beautiful. And knowing the villains of history and literature help us to know what happens if we don't cooperate with the true, the good, and the beautiful. It gives a child a sense of perspective, cautionary tales, and a sense of aspiration. And if those important spaces of the soul are left empty, they're going to be filled with something that we don't like.
Where do you point moms and dads in an increasingly, quote-unquote, woke society where beyond just the culture in general and everything that goes on and everything that we consume every single day, you've got this wokeness that is entering into almost every fabric of what we do. So if a mom or a dad are just pulling their hair out, say, what do I do with my kids? What's your advice?
Exercise extreme control over what comes to them through electronic devices. Get a copy of a book by John Senior called The Death of Christian Culture, because in the back there's an appendix of 1,000 books to read with your children between the ages of 5 and 18. Connect with other sound Catholic families and demand of your pastor robust, authentic Catholic preaching and serious worship. We don't have to despair. We also can't be passive.
And as we talk about living as Catholics in the culture and conscience, just in, it's a deal. Elon Musk has been successful to buy Twitter, $54.20 a share. That really could be good news for us as Catholics, because he wants to lift, well, maybe it's a double-edged sword, Father, your take. He wants to lift all the governors that we have right now on Twitter.
Well, you know, I'm going to wait and see. The idea that any one wealthy person is going to come save us from ourselves, I tend to be rather skeptical about that. I find it noteworthy that movers and shakers in culture and media who would hate me and what I represent are upset about what Elon Musk is doing. That helps me to keep my fingers crossed that maybe something good will come out of it. I tend to have a very robust sense of skepticism when anytime someone who's very wealthy says, I'm going to fix it for you. So I'll wait and see. I'm guardedly optimistic.
But those movers and shakers are also forming the next generations.
So, oh my goodness, yes, they are.
So how do we navigate that? And, you know, if you've got a child who's a sophomore in high school and considering colleges, when we see, again, the wokeness and what is out there, how do you help your sons and daughters chart through those very choppy waters, and waters that will probably get even worse?
You have to teach them to be very careful and critical consumers of culture. You know, you don't want to lock your kid in a broom closet in Montana and have them churn butter until they're 18 and then send them out into the world and say good luck with that. No, you have to be, you know, sometimes you're going to have to watch something objectionable as a family and say, let's talk about this. Let's go through this together. When I was teaching ethics, we had an exercise called the Daily Depredation, and I would give them a clip from something that was on the internet or an essay. And I say, take a few minutes, read it through, write your response, tell me what you saw, what's wrong with it, what's right with it. And then I would go through it line by line and say, here's all the bad stuff that you missed. And eventually they ended up with a very practiced eye for finding the morally objectionable targets. And it was a great learning experience for them and for me. I think that sort of thing, you know, look at something objectionable as a family in a controlled environment. Say, now let's talk about what's wrong with that and how would you respond to that in the face of hostile opposition. That's a great exercise. Build up a kid's confidence that he doesn't have to fold, that the truth really is on his side and he's not obliged to follow the mob. That's going to make a really strong kid.
Stick around with us for a couple of more moments. And by the way, I take some umbrage with what you said because my degree is in churning butter. But that is certainly not been a very productive career, at least so far. But, there is hope. So, you know, it could come tomorrow. The butter industry could come back. You never know. Elon Musk could buy Land O'Lakes butter, and then I could, literally be rolling in it. Father Barbara McTagg is here. We're having some fun, but we're really talking about conscience, and you know how difficult it is as you just try to form your conscience and live in the culture, let alone raising your kids. 888-914-9149, our conversation with Father McTagg, and your calls coming up next on the Drew Mariani Show here on Relevant Radio and the Relevant Radio app.
Catholic Order of Foresters is proud to sponsor the Relevant Radio studio line. For information about employment opportunities and flexible premium life insurance plans, visit relevantradio.com/Forrester.
The Drew Mariani Show on Relevant Radio.
Helping you to form your conscience this afternoon, John Harper for Drew, Father Robert McTagg, our guest today, and forming our consciences in this culture, as you know, is a daily, sometimes almost hourly challenge as Roman Catholic men and women, but Father is giving us some solutions that you and I can put into effect in our lives and also help our children navigate through these very choppy waters. Margaret's in Winnetka, Illinois, joining our conversation this afternoon at 888-914-9149. Margaret, welcome to the Drew Mariani Show. You're on with Father McTagg.
Hi. Yes, I was just thinking, the saying, it takes a village, needs to go, because the village is now run by a very liberal society. And
well, I'm thinking of the old term, village idiots, right? Yes, exactly.
Yeah.
Sorry.
No, I agree.
But you, Margaret raises a good point. And also, if we just go into the Psalms, have we failed to heed sacred scripture's warning to not put our trust in princes, those princes being social media, Father McTagg?
Yeah. You know, the idea that someone's going to fix it for us, or it's someone else's job to do the work that needs to be done. Now, it's true that we're social and we need community, but the phrase, it takes a village to raise a child, the village has become the state. And we've seen in Canada and the United States and elsewhere unelected bureaucrats saying parents have to get over the idea that they're the principal and primary educators and formators of the children. It is the work of the community, by which they mean the state. And we have to push back against that really hard. These are God's children entrusted to the care of families and the Christian community. And the state's intervention is by invitation only.
Margaret, do you have children, grandchildren? How have you navigated through these difficult times?
I've got two kids. They're in college. One's graduating law school. One's going into law school. And the problem is they were raised Catholic and they went to college, and now they believe what everybody else believes, and that the Catholic Church is so out of touch. So they learned from the village after they left home.
How do you have that conversation? I think of attorneys, and we think of one of the skills that attorneys have. In fact, this is happening now before the Supreme Court. We're going to talk about this in a couple of moments. The football coach in Bremerton, Washington, about praying on the field. Attorneys are good at arguing points. As you talk about faith and how they have walked away or maybe are lukewarm in their faith, especially with the one who's graduating law school, what's their argument?
Oh, they have so many excuses. Now they've actually just tuned me out now. And their argument is, you know, they were born gay. The same things come up that you hear every day.
Right.
So they believe that you got to love everybody. And of course you've got to love everybody, but you can't. Mm-hmm. It's the act of, let's say, a homosexual act that is what's wrong.
Right.
And but they, at this point, they don't even want to hear it. They've tuned me out. And I'm hoping that, you know, someday they'll grow up and they'll see things differently.
Father McTagg, how do you start to have that conversation if you're Margaret when the kids come back for Thanksgiving?
Well, I like the way she first said it. She said they have so many excuses. Yes, they have excuses. They don't have arguments, because real arguments are oriented towards the truth. And they're just using technique to move away from the truth towards what the mob approves at the moment. Mm-hmm. And even if someone is born that way with same-sex attraction, which is supposed to be the mic drop moment, but born that way as male or female is irrelevant, I find that an interesting conundrum. Even if they're born that way, it doesn't mean it's good for them. I might be born that way to be predisposed to alcoholism. It doesn't mean that alcohol is good for me. So born that way doesn't do the job they think it does. And likewise, the slogan, you know, we have to love everybody. Well, yes, we do. What does that mean specifically in this case? No, they've already moved on. Right. A lot of what passes for education these days is sloganeering. And you know, Margaret, you may be at the point now, and I know this, witnessing to family can be really hard. You might be at the point where any words that you use will only make things worse. And this is where you have to follow the example of St. Monica and just commit to radical intercession. Have masses said, pray your rosary, make sacrifices, pray and fast, novenas. You know, get the whole company of heaven working on your kids, and trust in God's providence that it might be somebody else who reasons with them back into the faith, because, you know, you're just mom. You know, what could you know? So love them through the spiritual life, and then pray that someone else runs them over through the intellectual life.
I remember, you know, the in the Bible, Jesus was not welcome in his own town. They
sure.
didn't want to hear what he had to say, and I feel the same
right.
way. So I have been going to Mass every day. I go to confession every week. I pray the rosary with my rosary group, and I fast on Wednesdays and Fridays. And if that doesn't do it, I don't know what will.
continue to do that, and at the risk of appearing self-serving, there's a very good book that both of your sons would profit from called Real Philosophy for Real People, Tools for Truthful Living. I have it in good authority that the author worked very hard on that book with people like your sons in mind.
I'll second that, Margaret, because okay. That's Father McTagg's book, and we talked to him about that on the air, and that really is a great tool. And maybe, and this is just from a layman's standpoint, but the next time they do the argument about being born gay, just say, well, how does that make sense in the light of all the gender fluidity that's out there? And then just wait for the silence. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5.
Ask them, are there people who were born racist? And if they are born racist, Do we just come to accept that? Is that what love looks like in that case?
Margaret, I'm going to pray for you. Margaret, I'm going to pray for you and your kids as well, because I know this is on the hearts. And it's our number one prayer request here at Relevant Radio for children to come back to the church and in full communion with the church. Margaret, thanks for adding to the conversation Winnetka, Illinois. And Father McTagg, thank you. I know you've written about this, and you've been very kind to share an advanced copy with us here on the Drew Mariani Show. Where will this be published?
Real Philosophy for Real People is available right now through Ignatius Press.
Right.
And if you go to aliteia.org and just type in my name and conscience, there's a good 8, 10, 12, 15 articles there as well.
Okay, that's great. Father Robert McTagg joining us from San Francisco today. Father, thank you. God bless.
Right. God bless you, John. God bless your good work. Bye-bye.
24 before the hour now, it is the Drew Mariani Show. And on this Monday afternoon, there is a big case that's being heard before the Supreme Court right now. It's a case of religious freedom. And it's the case of Coach Joseph Kennedy. He's the football coach at Bremerton High School outside of Seattle. He would always pray all by himself on the field. He would thank God for his glory. He did that all by himself. And then a few players on their own volition would join in. And then before you know it, members of the opposing teams would join in, their own volition. It had nothing to do whether you played because you prayed. And then some parents joined in the protest. Well, this has gone from circuit courts all the way up to the Supreme Court. It is being heard right now. If you want to hear a little bit of what's going on, this is Coach Kennedy's attorney, the former Solicitor General of the United States, Paul Clement. We played this about a half hour ago, but if your radio is just going on right now, here's an exchange that Coach Kennedy's attorney had with Associate Justice Clarence Thomas.
We know it's not a part of his job, especially since the school district didn't know anything about it initially, and it objected to it, so it can't be a part of his job.
Well, that's music to my ears, Justice Thomas.
Let's make sense of this for you right now with Will Hahn, who's joining us, and he joins us from the Beckett Fund. He's been a counsel there for the last 3 years, and he's been a member of the legal team that unanimously prevailed before the Supreme Court in Fulton versus the City of Philadelphia. They successfully argued the Diocese of Lubbock versus Guerrero before the Supreme Court of Texas. He's also briefed and argued cases defending various religious institutions and courts nationwide. Will, welcome to the Drew Mariani Show.
Thank you so much. It's my pleasure to be with you.
What do you make of that exchange? And I know you only heard a little soundbite there, and it's not in context with Clarence Thomas. And Judge Sonia Sotomayor was having a back and forth with Attorney Clement, saying, well, what if it was a hypothetical? Kids walk in and the teacher is by herself praying her Bible at her desk. Is that okay? Oh, but what if she is praying the Bible out loud? Is that okay? You've argued before the Supreme Court. Some of this stuff seems ridiculous, sublime to me, but I'm just an outsider looking in. What does a conservative Supreme Court say to you in terms of how they may rule in this case of Coach Joseph Kennedy?
Well, if it seems incoherent to you, that's because you still have common sense. And unfortunately, our Establishment Clause case law since the 1970s has had many departures from common sense. Instead of looking for a test that reflects the religious diversity in our country, that reflects our long tradition of robust religious exercise in public life, there's been this confused idea that being neutral toward religion means having no religion at all. And that's really just a recipe for censorship and not religious liberty, which is what the First Amendment protects. I think many justices were cluing into that, the incoherence of the current state of the law, which you were getting at with some of the questions you raised. And I think that we'll see a victory for Coach Kennedy in this case that attempts to, again, clarify that the First Amendment protects robust religious freedom in public life, and it's a natural part of who we are. And to suggest otherwise is not only unnatural, it's also unconstitutional.
I hate to sound alarmist, but we're on a slippery slope. And I think you and I have had this conversation before when some of these cases have come up. And I know we had the conversation on Morning Air several times when the Little Sisters of the Poor case was being argued before the Supreme Court. But in this specific case of a football coach by himself, he was doing it for years before the kids joined in, just saying a prayer, thanking God for his glory. Are we on a slippery slope where somebody may tap me on the shoulder in a restaurant at some point in time and say, I'd rather you not pray here?
Thankfully, I think the lawyers for the school district was acknowledging just in his overall approach and presentation to the court that that kind of argument just doesn't have any play in our law. There was a lot of an attempt to try to complicate the case and muddy the waters about things that aren't really in dispute. Because when it comes down to the principles, they really are that straightforward. The school district fired Coach Kennedy because he prayed in public, and the school thinks that there's not a First Amendment problem with that. And that's obviously wrong, and a plain understanding of our traditions would bear that out. And I think that's why Coach Kennedy is going to win, and that's why religious liberty more generally has been on a winning streak at the Supreme Court over the past 10 years. There have been victories with broad majorities, sometimes unanimous decisions. So this is still a deeply American principle that you can reflect your religion in public life. And I think there's reason to think that Coach Kennedy will be the beneficiary of that winning streak here.
I know this goes beyond the bounds of just dealing with facts and arguing before the court. I'm asking for your opinion here. When you go in and argue some of these cases, and especially in this particular case where there were parents of the opposing team who objected to this, and that started the ball rolling, do you scratch your head sometimes and just say, why are people pushing the panic button when it comes to things like this? I mean, the guy's just praying out there. Kids, on their own volition, went out to join him. It had nothing to do with pray to play. What do you
That's
make
exactly
of this?
Right. That's exactly right. Well, I think it goes back to this confused understanding of what we're trying to protect in the First Amendment. And of course, no one wants actual forced coercion of someone's religious beliefs. But right. We are so far from that here. This was a completely voluntary, open prayer that Coach Kennedy did, that any other person who joined on their own volition. And it was merely the fact that he prayed in public that was itself a problem. And we have public expressions of religious faith from people all the time. There are Catholics who wear crucifixes. There are Orthodox Jews who wear yarmulkes. It is a normal and natural part of living in a pluralistic society. And that's not something that the First Amendment was designed to destroy. It was designed to protect.
It's funny that we're having this conversation because a week ago tonight I was having dinner with a priest in a restaurant, and I'm doing this show from our New York studio, and this was up in Tony, Darien, Connecticut in Fairfield County. And we're sitting there at a restaurant, and I mentioned that town's name, not to embarrass it, but there is a classic movie. I think it's from the late 40s or early 50s. You can see it on YouTube, and it's called Gentleman's Agreement. It stars Gregory Peck, where he goes undercover to expose anti-Semitism of the day in the New York suburbs. Where was that shot? In Darien, Connecticut. So that's a long preamble to say Father and I said grace before meals, and we got some raised eyebrows and some of those nervous grins from people at other tables. And that's why I bring up the conversation of the slippery slope, bring up the point of the slippery slope of one of these days somebody may tap us on the shoulder and just say, I'd rather you not pray here.
Well, hopefully you'll have a strong decision in this case from the U.S. Supreme Court to explain, well, we can pray in public because we're Americans.
I hope so, too. Will, thank you so much for your perspective. Will Hahn is a counsel with the Beckett Fund in Washington, D.C. Will, thanks so much.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
It's the Drew Mariani Show. John Harper filling in. By the way, this story on Coach Kennedy is on the front page of ESPN.com right now. So if you're up on the web, you'll see that. So this is a story that has legs beyond just what we're talking about in Catholic media. And of course, a lot of you will be talking about the fact that Elon Musk has done a deal to buy Twitter. $54.20 a share. How that could be good news for you and me as Catholics, we'll explore that with Patrick Madrid as we continue on the Drew Mariani Show here on Relevant Radio and the Relevant Radio app.
This hour is sponsored by Ave Maria Mutual Funds, where financial goals are aligned with pro-life values and fund decisions are based on investment fundamentals designed to preserve and grow wealth without violating moral beliefs. More information at AveMariaFunds.com.
Don't stop me now. Don't stop me. 'Cause I'm having a good time. Having a good time.
This is the Drew Mariani Show on Relevant Radio and on the Relevant Radio app.
Here on the Drew Mariani Show, news that broke within the last 20 minutes. He is the world's richest man, and he just bought Twitter. It's a deal for Elon Musk. Here's ABC's Alex Stone.
Only 11 days after the world's richest man abruptly said he might buy Twitter, the deal is done. Twitter's board had initially indicated it would not make a deal and was coming up with ways to block Musk from buying the platform that he's always been so critical of. But now the board announcing they have a deal. For $44 billion, Elon Musk is buying Twitter. It'll go private, Musk indicating he wants to open it up to more free speech. Alex Stone, ABC News.
Good news for us as Catholics. Let's talk about that now with Relevant Radio's Patrick Madrid. Hi, Patrick. Hello, Patrick. Do we have Patrick?
Hi, John. How are you?
Hey, how are you? Good. You were just tweeting something right now, I bet. That's why you were not on the phone.
No, you have my undivided attention, but I will tweet when we're done.
And Twitter is, we've always talked about this, you always talk about it, you use social media as a tool for evangelization, having just talked about the case that is before the Supreme Court right now with the football coach praying on the field. This is really good news because Musk has always been an advocate for free speech, so it's good news for us as Catholics.
Indeed it is. I welcome this. I think it's a great step in the right direction. As I think anyone who's been paying attention knows, John, Twitter has been a bastion of left-wing censorship and stifling of the free exchange of ideas. And the progressive far-left people who are in control of Twitter, they don't want certain voices to be heard, and they've had a free rein in silencing those voices. So Elon Musk, for his part, I don't know, you know, other than what I see in the news about him, I don't know anything deeper than that. Mm-hmm. But I do think his instincts are sound. He's described Twitter as, whether we like it or not, it is now universally used and accepted. So governments use it, politicians use it, presidents use it, huge financial corporations use it. It's become the currency of exchange of ideas globally. And who saw that coming? I didn't see that coming, but here it is. So what Elon Musk has said, as I understand it, is in order for this tool to be properly used and used in a way that will benefit people, it has to be free. It can't be subject to ideological biases the way it is now. So I think this is a big step in the right direction.
Well, look at the power of Twitter. Just 2 weeks ago today, you and I were talking about the video from China of the lockdown that you tweeted out that went viral. How many? 11, 12, 15 million views around the world?
Well, as you know, I'd like to say that, but actually it's like 8.4 million. But still, that's staggering.
It is.
It's just everywhere. Everywhere in the world, people have seen that, and they would not have seen it had it not been for Twitter. It just has a reach that is so amazing and far-reaching. And I've taken my fair share of heat from some people who don't like the fact that I stay on Twitter. They've criticized me publicly. Why don't you get off Twitter? You're just helping Twitter. Why don't you go to some of the alternative media sites? And I've steadfastly said, because there's a role to play for people like you and me on Twitter. And if all the voices like that leave, it will make it a less good place. And so in a way, although I didn't say I told you so, because I never saw this turn of events coming, the fact that it may very well now become something that is what we hoped it would be is all the more vindication, I think, for people staying on Twitter and really using it for the kind of tool it could be.
And speaking to that feedback that you get, that pushback you get from some of your listeners and some of your fans saying, why are you, Patrick Madrid, on Twitter? This could be a seminal change in the hate signaling that we see on so much of social media into something that we can control as Roman Catholic men and women with our might all across the world for virtue signaling.
I agree. And virtue signaling can be sycophantic and superficial, and we all know people who virtue signal just because they want to score brownie points.
Right.
And that's not what you're talking about. Certainly not what I'm talking about.
No. We're not talking about Hallmark cards.
That's right. Twitter has been sort of the exclusive domain of the gotcha, you know, the put down, the riposte, the witty retort that puts somebody in his place. And people have become really good at doing that, and often, you know, without much more substance behind it. So although it's anyone's guess, and I can't read the future, I see this move by Elon Musk purchasing Twitter, number one, is basically defanging and declawing the far left, which dominates Twitter, and now allowing other people, like, for example, Catholic folk, pro-life folk, Christian people, people of goodwill in general, right, who want to express other opinions that are entirely valid, but they're not being heard as much. I think we are maybe, just maybe, starting a whole new chapter in our public discourse, and I welcome that.
Yeah, maybe this is the opportunity for clarity and charity to really rule the day, as opposed to just the vile that we tend to see on social media.
Totally. In fact, to your point, John, Elon Musk 3 hours ago, he tweeted, "I hope that even my worst critics remain on Twitter, because that is what free speech means." And I think he nailed it with that. I'm not an Elon Musk acolyte. Mm-hmm. I'm not an Elon Musk follower. I don't even follow him on Twitter. I don't need to, because he already shows up on Twitter. But he's definitely doing something to shake up the established status quo. And judging from the hysterical antics on the left, I take that as a good thing, because they realize, almost in a way analogous to the people who are just petrified that Roe versus Wade might be overturned.
Right.
And you can see their hysteria level rising and rising. So to my mind, that indicates that we're on the right track and we're moving in the right direction.
The left is hysterical because, at least at face value, as we have this conversation of Elon Musk buying Twitter, Patrick Madrid, he's loving the truth. Loving the truth in the left, that's oil and water.
Yeah. Well, the truth, I mean, I'm not on the left, but I observe the people on the left, and my impression is that many of them, they're sincere and they believe what they believe. It's not as though they know it's false, but they're putting it out there anyway. I think some may be cynical, and some are hypocritical. You'll find hypocrites on the right. You'll find cynics on the right, too.
Sure.
So I don't think that's unique to the left. But the left wants to control speech. And this is indicative of when they realize that their arguments are inferior and their arguments won't hold up under, you know, public scrutiny. It's easier to silence your opponent than it is to let your ideas go toe-to-toe with that person's ideas in the public arena. And that's what we've seen. And I think they become accustomed to it, whether on Twitter or Facebook or in various other platforms. They become accustomed to having their fingers on the buttons and the levers of power. And that's probably one big reason why they're so alarmed about Elon Musk buying Twitter, is they're realizing that this, in a big way, is starting to slip away from them.
Have we outsourced so much of our conscience through social media, Patrick, that it's going to be difficult, even with the good news of Elon Musk buying Twitter, it's going to be difficult to put that toothpaste back in the tube, because we have let social media think for a couple of generations of Americans, a couple of generations of Catholics?
Well, it's certainly insightful to take into account how many people now have, in an almost Pavlovian way, have become conditioned to only say things that they believe will pass muster on social media.
Right.
And if they feel that somebody will push back, they may remain silent. I don't know what to predict, really. I don't. I don't know if it'll become more of a Wild West or less of a Wild West when it comes to the free exchange of ideas. But one thing I do know is that if it goes the way I think it's going to, and the way Elon Musk has said that he wants to take it, it will remove that power imbalance, which is tilted heavily toward the far left, as is most of the media in any case. I think it will remove that power imbalance, and then we'll see some kind of an equilibrium. That's what I'm hoping for.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, because the bottom line is the bottom line, the literal bottom line, because if Elon Musk is successful, and everything points to that success in having Twitter as an open forum, if you're Facebook, if you're Instagram, if you're any other one of the social media platforms, you're going to have to go in that direction in order to survive.
Yeah, especially, that's a very good point, John, because they're all watching. Mark Zuckerberg is watching all of these platform owners and boards and, you know, the people who are in charge of them. they're going to watch very carefully. And if they see that, Twitter now is becoming even more robust, if more people are going there, I have a feeling that they're going to make, you know, because like you said, the bottom line, you know, money talks. And so they're going to realize we may need to rethink how we do things, because if it's working for him, it could work for us. And that's where the dollars and cents comes in.
Elon Musk says he's going to raise that 280-character minimum on Twitter, Patrick. But back in the days when it was, 135 characters, whatever it was, we would
I think it was 144.
Originally. 144. We would always say this on the old morning air, is that every one of the Psalms fit into a 144-character Twitter tweet. So that
the
was
only
a way
thing
to
I want Elon Musk to do is to provide an edit button. That's the most maddening thing about Twitter, is once you put it out there, you
it's
can't fix
there.
A typo. I hope he fixes that.
It's out there. Patrick, thanks so much. We'll listen for your show tomorrow morning, 8 a.m. Central, the Patrick Madrid Show. And Patrick, I'm going to embarrass you, but you and I have had these conversations off the air so many times when I've told Patrick, you're the smartest guy on the radio in America today, because you know, you deal with solutions and you deal with common sense and you deal with really who we should be as common sense Catholics in the culture. And we appreciate that. And it truly is a blessing to have you on Relevant Radio. And thanks for your time again today.
John, I should be to say so, and I reciprocate space. Thank you.
Patrick Madrid today. We'll pray the Divine Mercy Chaplet on this day after Divine Mercy Sunday, and then we'll talk about the miracles that you have experienced. Praying the Divine Mercy Chaplet coming up next on the Drew Mariani Show here on Relevant Radio.